My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big ROAS man. Then he just kept saying things like, the bigger the ROAS, the better, over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means calculating a return on ad spend. One thing's for sure, I'll be known as the ROAS man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/customer to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/customer. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. Sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
You're listening to Math and Magic, a production of iHeartRadio.
I think you need to be a fountain of ideas. So I write down everything. Anything that sounds insane, I still write it down. I still pitch it. And I try to create environments where anybody can say anything without any judgment. And I think the best clients and the best relationships are, you've set that process up together where you've created the environment for creativity to live.
Hi, I'm Bob Pittman, and welcome to Math and Magic, stories from the frontiers of marketing. Today, we have someone who has been at the center of the magic of advertising and has been a creative leader in the advertising business, from reinventing Burger King to the Fearless Girl statue on Wall Street. He's Rob Riley, Global Chief Creative Officer for WPP, the massive global advertising, marketing, and communications company. Rob started out life as Robert, grew up in New Jersey, played soccer, was in a band, was a fighting blue hen in college, and even had an early job as a bartender. He won a slew of awards and has been a part of some of the greatest creative agencies for good reason. He makes extraordinary creative. And for that same good reason, he has chaired the Cannes Lions Award Show jury 4 times, which for those of you outside the industry is like the Academy Awards of advertising. We got a lot to discuss today. Rob, welcome.
Oh, pleasure to be here.
What I want to do now is get you in 60 seconds. You ready?
Perfect. Yeah, I'm ready.
Do you prefer cats or dogs?
Neither, but if I'm forced to choose one, cats.
City or country?
I think city, though. We live out in Shelter Island, which is a beautiful place. So getting to be a little bit more of a, I don't know if I'm country, but more of an islander.
Books or movies?
I think I'll say audiobooks.
AM or FM?
Well, in college, I worked at an AM radio station, so I'm going to say AM for all it was back then.
Don Draper or George Lois?
Don Draper. George Lois, I met him once, and he cursed at me in an elevator.
Favorite TV show?
I'm going to say Beavis and Butthead.
Most exciting advertising campaign that you did not make?
Write the Future, Nike.
Let's jump into the meat. Let's talk about developing creative ideas. As we've discussed on Math and Magic before, and I'll take my own personal experience, that creative ideas for me are just sudden epiphanies. I think about the issue and then I forget about it. And in the middle of the night or often in the morning when I'm taking that nice, hot, meditative shower, answers just pop in my head out of nowhere. And by the way, David Eagleman, the neuroscientist who's been on this podcast, it has theories and talks about why that is. But how do you develop new ideas, and what's your creative process?
For people like me, my kind of creative process, it's so much a process. It isn't just come up with wild ideas. The briefing part of advertising is the thing that's most underrated for successful creative work. When you have a brief that's clear and pointed and inspiring, you have first in many steps of making great work. I always tell clients, listen, this brief is not for you or I. This brief is for that junior team that has to show Rob Riley work at 9 a.m. and it's midnight. And if that brief is convoluted, long, 8-point type on a page versus 12-point type, if it's trying to do too many things, it's going to be a nightmare. How do we make that brief the best friend? And the way you do that is you've got a very simple ask. It's going to solve some tension that's out there in culture. And when this idea lands in culture, what's the thing that the press writes about? What's that thing people love, share, and spread? That's the entire process. It started years ago at an agency called Christian Porter and Bogusky. We called it the press release process. And when the idea lands in culture, what's that story the press will write about? And if you can't figure that out in a sentence or two, there's no way you're going to be able to make an entire campaign that's going to pop in culture. And we did it to help young teams compete with senior teams on big projects like launching a Windows 10 to the world. It's really hard for young people to take that and figure it out. So I try to simplify things by creating that process, and I still use it today. It's evolved to what's that thing people love, share, and spread through the internet, through on social. But it's a very simple thing. If I can't imagine it, what it's going to be when it lands in culture, then it's probably not going to be a great idea.
So you've got a really good process, and it sounds like you're very thorough, very thoughtful about it. And you wind people up and say, okay, this is what we've got to do. It's got to accomplish these things. It's got to really impact culture. But the idea's got to come from somewhere. How does that idea hit you or hit other creative people?
Oh, fear that you won't have an idea. I don't like to use fear as a motivator, but I think for each individual person, like, you do wake up thinking, am I going to have any more ideas? And I think you need to be a fountain of ideas. So I write down everything. Anything that sounds insane, I still write it down. I still pitch it. And I try to create environments where anybody can say anything without any judgment. And I think the best clients and the best relationships are, you've set that process up together where you've created the environment for creativity to live.
We talked about George Lois, and you told me your George Lois story. George Lois created, I want my MTV. And I had lunch with George when Mad Men first came out. And he goes, that's not me. We spent a lot of time at lunch telling me that wasn't him, which meant it was probably more him than not. But it was interesting with George, is George was not afraid to revive old advertising ideas. As a matter of fact, I Want My MTV was actually I Want My Maypo. And when George pitched it to me, he said, look, this was really successful for Maypo. I think this is what we need, because our goal was, we had cable companies that did not want to put MTV on because they wanted us to pay them. We didn't have any money to pay them. And we had this very crazy audience. We said, well, we can enlist them to go sort of get consumer pull for this. And so he wasn't afraid to go back and use it. But I saw him throughout a lot of his work and others as well, go back and mine great ideas from the past. Place for you in that, or do you have another point of view?
Well, everything is derivative off everything, right? I don't think there's too many original ideas. Years ago at Crispin, to promote a Burger King chicken sandwich, we came up with this idea called the subservient chicken. But it was a guy in a chicken suit responding to commands. There's been a million things with people in chicken suits, right? But until you do it and put a twist on it and make it just weird enough, then that's when it becomes special. So now what George did, I don't know if you can get away with it now. I mean, he literally took the exact same campaign he made decades before and just put it into MTV. I actually give him a lot of credit for not worrying about what people might think of, like, oh, you stole your own idea, because it was the right idea for MTV at the time. I mean, that campaign, you could say, is probably a big reason why MTV was successful. I mean, I remember it like it was yesterday. I remember the first day MTV came. It was a Saturday afternoon, I believe. I was in Long Island, New York, at my aunt and uncle's house. watching this thing come on, and I remember it like it was yesterday. So in some ways, like, I give George Lois a lot of credit for being brave enough or not caring enough. But I think his style, but like the style of being gruff and maybe yelling a bit more, like, those days are gone. You can't get away with it now. Like, you really have to be more of a charming provocateur. You know, you need to charm your own people, your coworkers, and your clients with, charm them with wit, intelligence, caring about their business more than they care, knowing about their business more than they do. Then you can be provocative. The days of throwing chairs at clients or at teams, or those are gone. It's a much different world, and you got to figure out how can you be successful in that style of business. And I'm not necessarily a yeller or screamer, but, you know, I did a lot of coaching from 10, 15 years ago where, you know, I was intense and, you know, didn't care about people's feelings as much. So I think it's a new kind of creativity that, you know, it'd be interesting if George could survive in this day and age.
Let's take that note of the past. At the dawn of the century, you were the acting chief creative officer at Hill Holliday, and you took a 60% pay cut to change jobs and become just a copywriter at Crisp & Porter. Clearly, it all worked out. Why did you take that risk, and what lesson did you learn?
Well, I had worked for this amazing boss named David Weikel, and he was the chief creative officer, and they parted ways, and I was one of the more senior people there, but not very senior at all. And they said, well, maybe you can step in temporarily while we search for a new CCO. Might have been some discussion if you want to throw your hat in the ring to be that person. And I kind of realized that I had all the skills of a great creative director without maybe the work of a great creative director. And I didn't want to end up being a New York creative at a certain age that had a giant salary but didn't have the work where people would follow you. So I ended up going down to Crisp & Porter and Bogusky, at the time probably 100, 120 people, sort of getting known for doing some really interesting national work for smaller clients. And I pitched Alex Bogusky, you know, my current wife, my only wife, but she was my girlfriend at the time. She was working there, so I had a connection, but Alex wasn't going to hire me just because I was the boyfriend. Maybe, in fact, didn't necessarily want some guy from New York who had all the wrong sort of clothes and was a big creative director from New York City come down to his agency in Miami that was really small type culture. But I knew that's the kind of work I needed to be part of, because in the end, you don't necessarily just follow people. You'll follow people because of the work they've done. And I had all the skills of being able to present and good with clients and maybe good with teams, but I didn't have enough creative work that I thought was like culture changing that was going to get me to a long-term career. So I took a few steps back, but it wasn't the easiest ride when I got there. You know, I was the guy from New York. Everybody's in flip-flops and shorts. I'm here in the Prada boots and black. I stood out like a sore thumb. And about 30 days into it, Alex calls me in his office and said, listen, man, I love the work you're doing. I think you're fantastic. Here's the problem. No one else likes you. So I thought he would say, it doesn't matter as long as I like you. He said, that's the opposite. I can't have one guy ruin the culture. So you got to figure out how to get people to like you. And long story short, I ended up going back and deciding, like, you know what? I'm just going to shut my mouth and sit in the corner and crank out work. And that's what I did. And then once you start making work people respect, that was the beginning of building a body of work that I'm really proud of at every level, copywriter, creative director, CCO, creative chairman to now WPP, head of a holding company.
Well, you know, let's go back in time for a second. Why didn't they like you? What were you doing?
Why didn't they like me? Well, I probably had the wrong clothes. I had an incredibly intelligent, smart, beautiful girlfriend who's now my wife and doing all the amazing work. And I was a boyfriend from New York. I came from a big New York ad agency, and it wasn't quite fitting in the culture. And I think growing up in New Jersey, like, we're loud. And when I went and told my wife that Alex said that people didn't like me, her response was, why don't you just try shutting up and doing the work? You know, like, you're the problem. So I was taught a lesson early on to shut my mouth and do the work. And when you have the work, you get the respect.
Well, that's a great lesson. And 10 years later, you were the chief creative officer of Crisp & Porter, so it all worked out.
Yeah, it all worked out.
You continued to succeed. You went on to be global creative chairman at McCann Worldwide Group from 2014 to 2021, and then on to WPP in your current role. Everyone knows the Fearless Girl statue on Wall Street. What's the story?
It's a great story because State Street Global Advisors was an account that McCann had for a few years and hadn't been known for doing such great work. But when I went to McCann, the first thing I did to turn around an agency that maybe hadn't been doing as well as they had hoped was let's put an attainable goal in place. And we called it Three for All. And it was, how do we create three magical pieces every year for every client in every office? And this way, everybody's responsible for contributing to hopefully the creative turnaround that McCann eventually achieved. But we needed a process. And I think three magical pieces a year is pretty attainable. And if you know, you don't rely on just one account making the famous work, every account has to deliver. And State Street was probably one of the most challenged. It's because it's a financial company based in Boston, a great company, but not known for doing very bold work all the time. But at the end of the year, we didn't really have three pieces of work that we could hold up and say, these are our best three pieces of work for State Street. And someone said, well, they got this amazing fund called the She Fund where you can invest in female-led companies. Because State Street realized they were part of the problem with the lack of female leadership on Wall Street. They created a fund where you can invest in female-led companies, and they put pressure on companies to put more females on their board. So, of course, an easy thing for us to do would to do a print ad about it. But, you know, we brought the print ad, but then here's 30 more ideas. And one of the ideas was not necessarily Fearless Girl. The idea was to put a female bull in front of the male bull. And amazing team, Lizzie and Tally, came up with the idea with the help of Eric Silver, who was the CCO of North America. And, you know, they kept coming in my office saying, oh, we love this idea. And I'm like, okay, go for it. And of course, the client said, we love the idea, but, you know, we're just not comfortable with it. And the reason they're not comfortable with it, because there's no such thing as a female bull. It's a cow.
Right.
And that's why, you know, as a CCO, you really have to let people, if they're so passionate about something, go try and sell it. But what they didn't necessarily realize was it wasn't necessarily the bull or the cow that was going to be the thing people were talking about. It was the standoff. It was the standoff to the charging bull, which had become the sort of the symbol of the misogyny on Wall Street, if you will, right? So I said to them, go back and let's see if there's another way to cut this. And they came back and through a lot of brainstorming, came back with little girl, her hands on her hips, staring down the bull. We called it Fearless Girl to match the cadence of charging bull, meet Fearless Girl. And then we bought 2 weeks of space in front of the bull. We built out cobblestone to sort of match the cobblestone. And we said, we got 2 weeks for this to hit. And I knew that it would hit. And I knew once the world and the city fell in love with her. And again, remember, Hillary did not win the presidency. So there was a lot of angst in the world, certainly around this. So it came at the perfect time. We launched around International Women's Day. And the rest is history. You know, the interesting part of this, Bob, is that she was causing a lot of traffic with the bull. The bull itself always causes traffic. But then with Fearless Girl, it really was causing a bit of a traffic concern. So the city came to us and said, oh, we need to move Fearless Girl. And we're like, we're going to move her where? Oh, we're going to move her to a park. It's like, no. We'll move her to Germany or to Tokyo or to London. They all want her. There's only one place she goes, and that's standing in front of the New York Stock Exchange. And if you go there today, she stands in front of it and faces the entrance. You know, it doesn't front it. So when those stockbrokers leave every day, they got to see her and remember to do the right thing.
More on Math and Magic right after this quick break.
My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big ROAS man. Then he just kept saying things like, the bigger the ROAS, the better, over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means calculating a return on ad spend. One thing's for sure, I'll be known as the ROAS man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/customer to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/customer. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
AI might be the most important new computer technology ever. It's storming every industry. And literally billions of dollars are being invested. So buckle up. The problem is that AI needs a lot of speed and processing power. So how do you compete without costs spiraling out of control? It's time to upgrade to the next generation of the cloud. Oracle Cloud Infrastructure, or OCI. OCI is a single platform for your infrastructure, database, application development, and AI needs. OCI has 4 to 8 times the bandwidth of other clouds, offers one consistent price instead of variable regional pricing, and of course, nobody does data better than Oracle. So now you can train your AI models at twice the speed and less than half the cost of other clouds. If you want to do more and spend less like Uber, 8x8, and Databricks Mosaic, take a free test drive of OCI at oracle.com/strategic. That's oracle.com/strategic. Oracle.com/strategic.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cash back on purchases. And pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
Welcome back to Math and Magic. Let's hear more from my conversation with Rob Riley.
I want to go back in time a little bit to get some context on you. You grew up in Jersey in the 70s and 80s. Can you paint a picture of those times and how you grew up? What was your environment?
Just awesome, Bob. New Jersey is awesome. You know, we get hit a bit sometimes. I don't know where you're from, Bob, but...
Mississippi.
Jersey,
Mississippi. You think you get hit in New Jersey, Mississippi gets hit a lot.
Yeah, you get a couple shots. You know, you've done quite well for a guy from Mississippi. So Jersey gets a little bit of the same. We always seem like we're scrappy and fighting. I'm actually mostly Italian. My mother's side was all Italian, and my father's Irish and German. But even though my last name is Riley, I grew up mostly Italian with my grandmother 10 minutes away, and the sauce on the Sundays, that whole thing is very much a big part of my life. And I grew up in an environment that was very positive. Grew up in the same house for my entire life. My father worked for IBM. Years later, I realized he turned down probably 10 promotions. IBM used to be known for I've been moved. The only way he got promoted was moving, and he turned down 10 promotions so the family could grow up in the same household. You know, sacrificed a lot. So it's not lost on me the sacrifices my parents made for their kids to grow up in the same place, with the same friends and same sports teams, and that comfortable environment that I don't think a lot of kids often get, certainly these days where you have to move a lot.
Your parents clearly had a huge impact on you. What lessons do you still use today that came directly from your parents?
My parents and also my grandparents, my mother's father was an artist. When he was young, he was a semi-pro hockey player. He was in the Rangers farm system, and he was about to go pro with the Rangers. And he chose to be an artist instead because he thought it would be a better way to make money. Isn't that ironic now? But as an artist, you know, he was very talented, but also it wasn't a guarantee that you're going to make money. So he ended up working in an advertising agency as a retoucher. He made money or supported his family by being a retoucher in advertising. That story always stuck with me. Just because you want to be an artist or you train to be an artist doesn't mean you're going to be successful. You know, creativity is a crapshoot. Sometimes you need luck. You need people helping you. But you need that hard work. So I always had that in the back of my mind. It's like, hey, I want to go into advertising. You know, once I started realizing I wanted to be a copywriter, it's like, this isn't a guarantee. I got to work that much harder, and I've got to do everything that would give me a leg up. When I used to have this presentation I called Creativity is the Only Way to Survive. And I think my own life and my own career is that. I'm always figuring out ways, like, how do I keep surviving and thriving in this world? And part of it is like always waking up thinking like it could be gone tomorrow. I could fall out of favor. That's the thing artists always struggle with, is like you put all this time and effort into it. Doesn't mean it's going to turn into a success.
You went to college at University of Delaware, the Fighting Blue Hens. Why there, and what did you get from your college experience?
Well, listen, Jill and Joe Biden, come on. We've got some pretty famous people who went to the University of Delaware. It's interesting. Delaware, another state that gets a lot of shots, right? You know, my mother didn't like to fly. We didn't go on many vacations outside of the Northeast area. So when I was choosing schools, it was really like I didn't want to be so far that my mother couldn't come visit me. And I was a soccer player, pretty good one in high school. And Delaware as a team was a Division I team, and I liked the coach. And he liked me, and I ended up going there to play soccer, and then ended up quitting, you know, after 2 years because I just wasn't playing. was frustrating. I mean, you play Division I sports, you're working that hard. And if you're not playing, you're like, why am I doing this? I'm not a quitter, but it did allow me to do other things, work at a radio station, work at an ad agency in Wilmington. So I think that choice I made, even though I look back on it and say, I wish I would have finished that out, and maybe I could have turned it around, but it allowed me to do things that maybe it put me in this position. So I think I got team mentality from being part of a high-level team for a very short time, but then I got the experience working at an ad agency. Wow. You know, I fell in love with advertising from that. So I feel like it all kind of always works out.
So how did you get your first job in advertising?
This is a great story. I lived in the rugby house on the main road at the University of Delaware. A bunch of rugby guys, you know, they were my roommates. And see, the rugby guys would throw parties every once in a while. And one Saturday afternoon, we're having a party. It's on the main road and it looks crazy. And all of a sudden, this guy in a Porsche stops and said, hey, what's going on? I'm like, I don't know. We're having a party. What does it look like? And I go, well, why are you here? He's like, oh, you know, I'm just driving by. It looks like fun. And I go, what do you do? I go, you're in a Porsche. And he goes, oh, I own an advertising agency. I go, I work at a radio station and I'd love to learn more about advertising. And I, you know, struck up a conversation with him. He gave me his card. I called him. And then right out of college, I ended up working for him as an account exec. DiDonato, Gladstone, and Quinn was the agency. Tom Quinn was the guy. And I owe that guy a lot. He gave me a shot getting to advertising, learning it. But I was an account guy at the time. I wasn't a copywriter. I wanted to be one, but I didn't really know how to do it. Yeah, that was the first job. So throw parties on your front lawn. You never know how it changes your life.
So let's jump a little bit to present day. How do you understand the consumer? We recently did a study along with Malcolm Gladwell comparing real America to marketing folks. And wow, big divisions. Really sort of like, you know, electric moment for all of us. The study did stuff like, what are two things you can't give up? Marketers in real America agree on snacking, but marketers say, I can't give up online shopping. Consumers say, I can't give up podcast. When you look at basic values, being a little more serious about it, the American public, two things that are very important that are really missing from the marketer's world is religion and the military. And so it's a number of things like that. It just says, wow, we're talking past each other on a lot of stuff. And by the way, I admit I'm one of those people. I live in this bubble, but we really try and understand the real America that we're talking to. How do you avoid living in a marketer's bubble and staying connected to real consumers?
Well, you got
to
read a lot of newspapers. You got to read a lot of things online, listen to a lot of podcasts, you know, try to listen to things that not necessarily about your own industry. But I don't know. I think it's a lot of how you've been brought up and grown up. I had an amazing parent, but, you know, money wasn't always plenty and, you know, saw struggles. And like a lot of families within America grew up, you know, knowing that my parents were working their ass off to put their kids through college, to do all those things. So I don't think you forget that. So that's what keeps me grounded. But I don't know. I think sports is the greatest of the connectors, you know, because you could be rich, you could be poor, you could be from the city, you could be from the country, but like, man, you are pulled together by sports. So I spent a lot of time. My wife probably thinks I spent too much time with sports, but I do think it is the great connector, because I might be in an elevator with someone and strike up a conversation, and sports is always that thing that connects you and allows you to start to get to know the people and hear what they're really caring about and thinking about. I don't think we're that different. And if you go globally, people are pretty similar too. Everybody wants to have a great life for their family, do well, enjoy life a bit, and we're not that different.
You know, it's interesting you say that about the stories. When I was a young man, I rode motorcycles a lot with a group of friends. And we did a lot of trips. We did two cross-country trips, one in 1992, one in 1994, across the two-lane highways across America, one the northern route, one the southern route. And when I came back from that trip, what struck me the most is everybody wants to talk to you. And if you just shut up and listen to them, they're going to tell you a lot of stuff you don't know. And through the years, I've been a pilot since I was a kid. And when I had smaller planes, I couldn't make it a long distance without stopping for fuel. And every time I'd stop for fuel, I would try and borrow a crew car and go into town just to see the town, no matter where that town was. And I sort of miss that at my age now, because I don't do as much of it. But boy, do you learn a lot. And let's jump to corporate culture. How do you build it and how do you use it?
All the CCOs of all our companies, we have a monthly get together, mostly virtual, because people are in different places. And I said, don't forget to tell everybody, hey, yeah, it's always a tough year, like advertising. It's always tough, right? But you can't forget to thank people and let them know that they've done a great job and accomplished so many things. It's easy to focus on the negatives. It's much harder to focus on the positives, you know? And how do we celebrate those things more? So I think that's how you build the culture. You just remind people, like, we've come a long way, done a lot of amazing things. We're seen as the most creative company in advertising. We're seen as one of the best places to work because I think people want to come work for creative places. I think we're constantly having to prove the value of creativity, and we're out there championing it. So I think the reminding people, like, the job they have is such a great one because, one, it's different every day. Two, creativity really is the world's most valuable asset, and you're agents for that, and agents for helping brands be really meaningful in people's lives. And I've said this many times that, you know, listen, it's brands that are filling in for governments that just can't afford to help people, which was the original point of government, was set up to help people. Well, we've not forgotten it, but we've got so many challenges. Like, brands have really filled in the void sometimes, and it's really a great honor to do. And I think we forget that we do have a big job. And so I try to focus on the positives and create that kind of culture.
What's your philosophy on businesses doing good for the world we live in?
There's not enough of it. And I hope we don't get tired of pushing it more than ever. People need help. So many people need help. And if a brand is out there that can help people and it's born out of their DNA, it's not some borrowed interest thing, like, then why wouldn't we help it? I think it should be a real serious part of people's marketing, purpose-led marketing. Because I think young people are looking at brands, and if you're not doing the right thing, well, they just won't use your they'll use somebody else. And so I do think it's important that we don't forget that brands can really be positive in people's lives and fill in when governments maybe can't get the job done.
You and I were on the radio as teenagers. I'm doing a podcast, and now you're a podcaster. What drew you to this medium? What has surprised you most about audio and podcasting?
Oh, it's a great question, because I have two people I work closely with, Alex and Jonathan, and they are the producers. And they run comms also. But Jonathan comes from the world of TV, and he was filling in here. He lives in Singapore, but he's actually moving here and running North America for us. But he kept pushing me into doing things, into doing more things out there. And I was on the Today Show talking about the Super Bowl last year, and he said, you need to do a podcast. I'm like, oh, I don't want to do it. There's too many podcasts, you know? Everybody's doing a podcast. But Mark had also said, Mark Reed, it said, listen, we need to put out more content for our teams, and you know, you need to do more. I said, well, I'll do a town hall. He's like, well, we already have a town hall. What else could we do? So a podcast seemed like a real natural way for me to connect with 115,000 WPP employees. So the rest of the world, if they listen to it, great. But it's really done for our own employees because, one, we have so many talented people within our walls that do so many great things, and how do we tell their stories? But again, it's a chance for people to hear from me biweekly through different guests about what I believe in and the kind of creativity I'm looking for and different people's stories. And if people are out there who haven't gotten to advertising and they feel like, oh, that sounds like a cool business, and we attract more diverse talent, then it's really done its job. So I'm liking it. I didn't love it at first, but Alex and Jonathan convinced me to keep doing it, and I quite like it now.
Welcome to our world. AI. We can't talk without mentioning AI. Friend or foe?
Oh, friend. Oh my God, such a friend. I think what's been removed from our business a bit, Bob, and this is just from a creative person's standpoint within advertising, because of course it's going to make production more efficient, and it's already making media more efficient, but it's going to allow creative people to experiment faster and fail a bit. You know, what's been removed is the time and money to experiment and fail, and that's such a part of the creative process. And I think AI is allowing designers to look at looks that would have taken a week to have it done in a couple hours and to take inspiration from that. But I do think in 5 years, and this is why WPP has bet so hard on creativity and bet so much on creativity, is that AI is going to put a lot of mediocrity out into the world. A lot of companies are going to be able to put out things at scale. So the brands that bet on creativity and the talent and the agencies that it takes to create those breakthrough ideas are going to be the ones who win, because that's what's going to be needed. So I'm a fan of it. It's just like the digital camera and the computer. I mean, there used to be art directors back in the 80s and 90s when the computer was first introduced. and who said, I'm never going to use a computer. I draw everything. Well, those people do not exist. And I think AI is going to be the same. If you're a creative person in advertising, you better learn it, understand it, at least be able to judge it, because AI will replace creative people, but creative people who are masters of AI eventually will replace creative people who just haven't embraced it and for all the things that it brings you.
It's time for some advice. If someone wants to be the next you, what advice would you give them?
Well, I don't know why they'd want to be the next me, but if someone wants to be maybe this successful in the CCO role, right? Because it's different than a copywriter and even different than a creative director. You really have to be good at everything. You don't necessarily have to be great at anything, but you really have to understand everything, the writing, the art direction, the design, the media part, the business side of it, the relationship side of it, how to sell to people in a way that feels that they're not being sold to, and how to provide inspiration and influence and leadership. If you're not down with all of those things, you won't be successful, you won't be happy, because this job isn't just sitting in your office and looking at ideas and saying yes or no. It's a lot of relationship building. There are very smart clients on the other side that are under so much pressure, and our jobs is like relieve that pressure, like by bringing them bold ideas that will lead to wildly successful business results, you know, that are based in their DNA as a company and have smart strategies behind it. Like, that's a lot of work. That isn't just throwing, you know, darts at a dartboard or playing ping pong and drinking beers to come up with crazy ideas. And maybe Mad Men has done that a bit. But Don Draper wasn't doing that. And, you know, he was the CCO of that company. Don Draper was dealing with clients a lot and dealing with the pressures of that. But he embraced a lot of it and maybe solved it with too many scotches on the rocks. But I think that's the part that people don't quite understand about being the CCO. It's so much about creativity, but it's so much more than being that hopefully inspirational leader for people when they need it the most, clients included.
As we wrap up, we always end with a shout out to the best of Math and Magic. A shout out to the greatest person you know of, who is the expert in the analytics or the math side of the business. And the other shout out goes to the best magician, the creative type. Can you give me your two?
Well, there's a woman and she just left recently, McCann. And she was my creative strategy partner. Her name's Suzanne Powers. And there's no one better at strategy than her, no one better at looking at the data and then turning it into inspirational insights and briefs. And she's by far the math magician because she uses data analytics and analyzes all types of research and then delivers such inspiring ways for us to go creatively. The magic part, it's not necessarily a choice that most people would do, but there's this woman named Devika Bulchandani, who's now the CEO of Ogilvy. We worked together at McCann and we talked about Fearless Girls. She's the reason it got sold. And I think the people that are either CEOs or account people don't get a lot of credit for being magicians. And she's a magician in how she sells work to clients and how she really understands their needs and turns it into assignments for us and really can take an idea and say, well, here, I know I didn't come up with it, but this might make it better. So it's not necessarily a choice of the Bill Birnbachs or the David Ogilvies or the Dan Wydens of the world, but I do think when you find a business person or a CEO or an account person that understands creativity so deeply and then can sell these ideas and figure out how to get them made, that to me is the real magicians of our business.
Rob, so great having you with us. Thanks for the stories and the insights, and nice to hear from someone at the top of their game. Thanks.
Bob, you're a legend, and this has been like one of the biggest honors I've had, and I was happy to do it.
Here are a few things I picked up from my conversation with Rob. One, write down all your ideas. Ideas are our lifeblood, especially when you're talking about the magic side of marketing. Create a system for logging all your ideas, especially your wildest ones. You never know when an old thought might lead to the next great innovation. Two, do the work. When Rob had the opportunity to rise to an executive level early in his career, he went the opposite direction. He decided to build out his portfolio as a copywriter so he could prove his talent and build credibility before becoming a leader. Dedicating time to doing the real work of your job will help you understand your business and craft better. Building that foundation will make you a better and well-respected leader in your career. 3, break out of your bubble. Pursue information that's outside your daily environment and personal interest. There's a huge gap between the values of marketers in major cities and those of consumers all over the country. Get out of your comfort zone and take in new information. Read things you usually wouldn't. Learn about a new industry or visit a new place. Think about what bridges the gap and use those values in your work to speak to a large audience. I'm Bob Pittman. Thanks for listening.
That's it for today's episode. Thanks so much for listening to Math and Magic, a production of iHeart Podcasts. The show is hosted by Bob Pittman. Special thanks to Sydney Rosenblum for booking and wrangling our wonderful talent, which is no small feat. Math and Magic's producers are Emily Marinoff and Jessica Kreinchich. It is mixed and mastered by Bahid Frazier. Our executive producers are Nikki Etor and Ali Perry. And of course, a big thanks to Gail, Raul, Eric, Angel, Noel, and everyone who helped bring this show to your ears. Until next time.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
Hello there. I'm Ann Thompson, editor-at-large for IndieWire.
And I'm IndieWire's deputy film editor, Ryan Latanzio.
And we're the co-hosts of IndieWire's weekly Screen Talk podcast.
Join us each week for an in-depth discussion of the latest in film and TV industry news with special guests along the way, including filmmakers and executives.
Hear from us every Friday morning on iHeart platforms or wherever you get your podcasts as IndieWire shares what we've learned from the movie week that was.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.